today on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
So now we're faced with a welcome challenge. Now that we have the ability to treat our patients, how do we figure out which drug to give? So I'd like to start by kind of digging into how we make those decisions on a day-to-day basis.
Today, Dr. Saraswatan Dasgupta joined the podcast to discuss ATTR-CM in 2026. Stabilizers versus silencers. How are you choosing in this PeerDirect Special Spotlight? All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Natasha Saraswat, an associate professor of medicine at the University of Chicago School of Medicine.
And I'm Dr. Noelle Dasgupta, associate professor of clinical medicine at Indiana University School of Medicine.
Noelle, thanks for joining me here today.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
So as you know, up until a few years ago, we really had no treatment for our patients with ATTR-CM. What we'd like to discuss today is more the big picture. Now that we have multiple FDA-approved treatments, how do we decide in a day in clinic when we're seeing amyloidosis patients, which drug to give, which category of drug to give, what to do first? Up until 2019, again, we had no FDA-approved treatments. Along came the FDA-approved treatment for tafamidis as a stabilizer, which keeps our protein in a four-leaf clover, the TTR protein, as you know. Following that, we've had the FDA approval of another stabilizer as well as a silencer, which helps prevent a patient's body from making about 85% of the TTR protein. So now we're faced with a welcome challenge. Now that we have the ability to treat our patients, how do we figure out which drug to give? So I'd like to start by kind of digging into how we make those decisions on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, those are decisions we have to make every day. And I want to first start by saying I think we are very fortunate that we have treatments. This has really been a change for this disease. And often we can personalize patient choices with medications, but some of the things to consider are about how these medications work and just the ease of giving them. So stabilizers are oral medications, and those include tafamidis and acoramidis, and they bind to that four-leaf clover that you spoke about, the TTR tetramer, and prevent it from dissociating so it doesn't form fibrils and deposit in organs and tissues. So those are oral medications. In contrast, the silencers go to the liver and are subcutaneous medications that decrease about 80 to 90% of hepatic production of TTR.
I think it's interesting when we compare the different classes of drugs. To me, having been in this field for several years, the way the drugs were FDA approved is that the silencers were initially approved and studied for hereditary neuropathy. And I think that does still play into our clinical decision-making of how we decide which drug to give first. How do you make that decision?
I completely agree. We have evidence to know that the silencers will stabilize hereditary polyneuropathy. And there are patients with wild-type amyloidosis that may also have neuropathy, and we don't have definite data for it, but we would think that it might help with that as well. So if a patient has neuropathy, I tend to lean towards a silencer.
Got it. So if there's somebody that has wild-type cardiomyopathy and no evidence of neuropathy, are you more likely to give a stabilizer as first line, or would you still consider a silencer in any situation?
I think either approach is completely valid, and I usually discuss it with the patients and decide on their preference, but I think either option is very reasonable, especially patients with early onset disease. It's great that we have choices, and I don't think there's a right or wrong answer.
I agree completely. I think, again, now we're really pushing as a field to diagnose these patients earlier, and we know getting them on treatment, the earlier the better they do long term. So a lot of it is exactly what you said, a discussion with the patients. And it's interesting how some people will prefer an injection over a pill or vice versa. And that really does play in because there is not good data right now medically to say one is better than another. How about our hereditary patients? How do you go about deciding for a hereditary patient which class of drug to give first?
Yeah, that's a good question. For patients with early onset disease and without neuropathy and with just a primary cardiac phenotype, I would consider either option. For more advanced stages or patients with neuropathy or autonomic symptoms, I tend to lean more towards a silencer.
I think it's really interesting that you mentioned the autonomic neuropathy. As you know, there was just a recent update to the ACC/AHA guidelines for treatment of these particular patients. And I do, I think the guidelines are wonderful in kind of walking us through an algorithm of how we decide on which drugs. But I do notice that one thing that I think was conspicuously missing were those patients with autonomic dysfunction. Where we say exactly what you said, patients with polyneuropathy may benefit more from a silencer, that group of patients with either wild type or hereditary that have autonomic dysfunction are a little bit left off the grid there. How do you look at that? How do you take that into account?
So, yeah, that's actually a very good thing you pointed out. And some of the autonomic symptoms are the most disabling symptoms for patients. So those are some of the most important to treat. I tend to lean towards a silencer, but then I also try to see if there are other medications they may need that are non-TTR specific to treat things like orthostatic hypotension and other things like that. Or if patients are having diarrhea, focusing on those treatments. I find that really treating those type of symptoms can make a huge difference in patient care. So it's often the non-amyloid specific drugs that just treat in general conditions that make a huge difference in a patient's life.
That's interesting. I completely agree. The other point I wanted to come back to is when we talk about our hereditary patients, I, similarly to you, often will reach for a silencer first if that's what the patient is also willing to do in a lot of those patients, because I do think they often have more disabling polyneuropathy and autonomic dysfunction. But there is some data with acoramidis specifically looking at prealbumin levels, which we think are representative of the concentration of amount of TTR protein, that a lot of the hereditary patients start out with a very low level, a low prealbumin, and then almost hyper respond to acoramidis, and really their prealbumin goes up. That said, I feel like when I look at the ATTRibute-CM trial, which studied acoramidis, sheer number of patients that were studied that had hereditary cardiomyopathy or polyneuropathy were actually quite low. So it's hard to know how much that should influence our decision-making. How do you think about that?
I agree. And the landscape of the patients in the clinical trials has really changed. The number of hereditary patients and just how sick the patients are has really changed throughout the trial. So it's hard to sometimes make these decisions because the patient population has really changed throughout the trials to healthier patients and patients that were diagnosing earlier, so they have more options. And I do think it's exciting that acoramidis did show a good stabilization in TTR early on, and that shows a lot of promise.
Yeah, I agree. I'm wondering how you talk through side effects with our patients, maybe starting with stabilizer versus stabilizer, tafamidis versus acoramidis. How do you have that discussion with a patient?
Yeah, in general, I find that the stabilizers are well tolerated. Sometimes there can be some GI side effects. And then with tafamidis, there can be some drug interactions, especially with some statins like rosuvastatin. So you really have to look at the patient's other drugs that they're taking and make a decision. But I think either would be appropriate. And sometimes it just depends on insurance or patient preference.
Agreed. And how about the silencers? What's your experience been in terms of side effect profile and how that plays into our decision making as well?
The second generations of the silencers tend not to have a lot of side effects for most of my patients. Sometimes there'll be flu-like symptoms, but those are typically short-lived. So in general, I feel like the silencers are very well tolerated. And it just sometimes depends on what a patient wants to do. Currently, Patisiran needs to be given every 3 months by a healthcare provider, whereas eplontersen, which is currently undergoing study, and if it's approved, would have the potential benefit that some patients might like to take it once a month at home. So it kind of just depends on patient preference and if they feel comfortable doing injections themselves.
Is there anything in our future clinical trials or ongoing clinical trials that you're looking forward to?
Oh, there's so many things I'm looking forward to. Well, we're doing the depleter or the medications, the antibodies that will remove amyloid, and those are very exciting, and some of the gene editing studies. So this is an exciting time in the field of amyloid. I would never even have thought these questions that we're looking at now, we would have even been studying. So it's been phenomenally part of this journey.
Agreed. I can't believe how much things have changed in the last 10 years. Just was so happy when we had a treatment. And now the ability that we have to have options of treatment and have these discussions with our patients is amazing. And I think that we just need to have these processes, you know, in place where we're discussing these with our patients and give them the options that they can have and tailor the treatment right to them.
I completely agree. This is an exciting time for us as clinicians and for our patients, and it's been really a privilege to be part of this journey.
The goal is still the same: diagnose early and get patients on effective therapy. Thank you, Noelle.
I completely agree, Natasha. Thank you.
And thank you to our audience for watching.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions, please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe to Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Dr. Saraswat and Dasgupta. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.